J-Tech Studios in Atlanta, Georgia. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. And now, here are your hosts, Tom Bastek and Mike Jacobs.
Hello and welcome in. It's America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. It's the game show, guys. I'm Tom Bastek.
And I'm Mike Jacobs. Hello, Tom. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year, Mike. Welcome to 2022.
It's a whole new one. It's been a minute since we've done something new, huh?
Yeah, man. It has been a couple of weeks. Obviously, the holidays in the way, but it's good to be back. And, of course, as soon as we are back, it's the end of season three.
Yeah, it is, which means, I guess, another break.
I don't know how much of a break. We may just come right back with season four.
That's true. We are pretty ready and raring to go for season four. So yeah. We may not be gone too long. But then again, we say that and then,
life gets in the way. So. I mean, it is.
Indeed. Absolutely. Yeah. But yeah, holidays, it's to be expected.
Very excited. We are probably 11 hours away from amazing amount of snows up here in the North Carolina Mountains.
Oh, goodness. I have not seen snow in some time, so I'm jealous.
I'm very happy, actually. It's been so warm up here. Literally, the week of Christmas, it was like 65 degrees.
Oh, wow. Yeah. I don't know what it was here in Atlanta, but it certainly was not cold. Yeah. I do know that London just had the warmest New Year's Day in history, like in human history. So that's good.
Hey, man, climate change, it's not real.
We're on the right path.
All right. Hey, so we've got a little bit of housekeeping to do. And then this week it is the amazing, and I'm going to screw it up, so I'm going to read it, because if I don't, I'll screw it up. The Super Happy Japanese Game Show Fun Time Extravaganza.
Indeed. I really like the word extravaganza, so I wanted to work that in there somewhere. But yeah, before we dive in, we do have a quick, it's not necessarily, I guess it is a correction. So okay. We were talking in the Survivor episode about when at some point people who have been eliminated will come back to form a council to vote. And we were unsure about when that happens. I posited that maybe it happened at that halfway point when they merged the tribes. That is incorrect. In fact, it only happens for the very end to determine the winner.
Right. And it's been so long since I've seen the thing. I didn't know. And I apologize for not doing more research on that. Maybe I should have. But thank God we got corrected on it.
Yes, indeed. So, yeah, there you go. You really only have to worry about not pissing people off enough to win. But I do still think that makes for an interesting dichotomy, because it's not just that you have to win, but you have to convince the other people to think that you should win as well.
Yeah, so, and the interesting thing about it for me, and if you folks don't know what we're talking about, please go back and listen to the Survivor episode. It was a good episode, and we had a lot of fun with it, even though it's not a true, like, what we would consider to be a game show. It is still a reality television show that fits in the sort of, like, game show reality competition series. So that's why we covered it. Plus, it had an amazing effect on the world of television. So if go back and listen to it. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I will say that whole idea of bringing somebody back in that, and you know, that's the first show that ever really did this, you know, you're voted off the island thing. That is a great twist to bring in right from the beginning. So now
for sure,
it sets people up for series going forward from that point to, like, what other twists and crazy things can we put in? Again, another way to continue to affect what comes behind it.
Yeah, which no doubt Survivor did that.
Oh, absolutely.
So shifting gears for a minute, I wanted to talk about something. It's not necessarily game show related, but it does touch on some topics that we brought up in the Survivor episode, and more specifically in the American Idol episode.
Sure.
I want to officially take back, I think, some of the things I said in American Idol, specifically along the realm of the idea of it being sort of shovelware music and hurting the art form and all that kind of stuff.
I don't think you came that you weren't that aggressive with it. I think you and I kind of came to the decision that it just wasn't for folks like us.
Yes. And I think I just wanted to almost sort of double down on that sentiment. I watched a documentary on HBO Max called Listening to Kenny G. And it is all about, yeah, it's all about, you know, smooth jazz musician Kenny G.
Dude, who doesn't love a little Kenny G? Come on now.
Well, so that's kind of what the documentary is really about, is like, who doesn't love a little Kenny G? And I mean, ultimately, at the end of the day, like, the guy is exactly what you would expect Kenny G to be. Like, he's a total cheeseball, but like, he's loving life. And really what stuck with me more than anything was that everybody gives him crap for being easy listening music. And his response to that is, what's wrong with making something that's easy to listen to? And for some reason, that just like really clicked in my head of like, it doesn't matter what my opinion of Kenny G is. He is the most selling instrumentalist of all time. He outsold Bach. Like, who am I to say that Kenny G is not fantastic? So by that same token, American Idol had, what was it, like 36 million viewers on their, you know, best nights?
Yeah.
Who am I to say that American Idol is, quote unquote, harming the art form? Not everything has to be art, you know? Sometimes you can just make something that's easy to listen to.
And here's the other thing, and I saw that a lot. I think we even talked about it on the air when we did that show. When I was in radio, man, it was about what was radio friendly. It wasn't like, well, this is new and cutting edge, different. No, people were like, no, dude. Listen, we're gonna play the stuff that's radio listening. Like, it's it is what it is. It has a hook. Now, maybe that isn't the kind of stuff that I listen to or I would want to put on. But rarely is it, except for nowadays, where you create your own radio stations. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody is now dialed in, no matter what music app you use, to put together the stuff that they love. And there's nothing wrong with that. But you couldn't sit back and do that when radio was as big as it was, because they chose kind of for you. And I still feel like at the end of the day, there is a huge audience for it, apparently. I don't think that audience is anything what I like necessarily.
Or that like I would interact with. And yeah. I think that's part of it. It's like, I'm not spending time with Kenny G fans, right? But that doesn't mean that there's not 500 million of them out there, you know?
Well, and what's crazy is you might be and don't know it.
Well, that's absolutely true. And I mean, not gonna lie, like, there were a couple songs throughout the movie that I was like, yeah, all right, this is kind of a jam. Like, I get it.
He did the soundtrack for a depressing movie, and I forget what the hell it was. Oh, I'll have to look it up. But I loved the soundtrack. It was amazing.
I mean, he's a talented dude at the end of the day.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. Like, I'm kind of burned out at this stage of my life on the Kenny Loggins thing. We talk about Kenny's here. Kenny Loggins has kind of burned me out right now. His songs come on when my wife's listening to the 80s music, and I'm like, I go over and I fast forward to the next song. I'm just like, I'm just a little burned out on Kenny Loggins. At the same time, the last night or the night before, we were talking about how the new Top Gun's about to come out. And one of the folks we were talking to was a younger girl. She's 20 years of age, and she's never seen the original. And she's like, I don't want to go back and watch all the other Top Gun movies. I'm like, sweetheart, there's one Top Gun movie.
You just got the one.
And it was amazing. And you need to listen to the music. And all of a sudden today, I found myself going, dum, 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 dum. Yeah. And Dana,
so that's actually not Kenny Loggins.
But, okay. But here's where I was right behind it. When I was humming it, I went and looked up the soundtrack. And when I looked at the soundtrack, Highway to the Danger Zone was there, and it was Kenny Loggins, and I was like,
That song rips, dude.
But I loved it, dude. Loved it, and I sang every bloody lyric of it, and it was amazing.
I will defend that song. I love that song.
Dude, here's the thing. I don't hate any of his music. I'm just burned out on it right now because I guess I've been listening to a lot of it. It's fine.
Yeah. Well, so to get back to the sort of the crux of the conversation, I'm done with the idea of like hating on stuff just because you don't like it. I mean, we've talked about before how I'm a Vanilla Ice apologist. I'm a Carrot Top apologist. So like, I can add Kenny G to that list with glee, But at the same point, like, I'm abolishing that list because the idea of being a apologist means that you're like accepting that it's not good, and I don't even want to make that concession anymore. It's like it's what you like or don't like. That's all it is.
Yeah, and you know what? It's that's the way I am with beer. Everybody's like, that's a bad beer. I'm like, no, it's not a bad beer. It's just a beer you don't like.
Right.
There's no such thing as a bad beer. It's just a beer you don't like.
Absolutely.
Same thing with comedians. There's no such thing as a bad comedian except Carrot Top. All right.
Oh,
so we're talking about
low blow.
We've got a little news we need to get to, and we got a lot to talk about with our good friend, Mr. Christian Carrion.
Indeed. Let's get it going.
Light up your cigarette, crack open a beer, put the kiddos to bed. From chaos around the world to carnage in your very old front yard, it's time for the news.
Thank you, Tom. Thank you, Mike. This is the news brought to you by BuzzerBlog.com. Now, as you can imagine, we've been overwhelmed by responses to the recent untimely passing of Betty White at the age of 99, just short of her 100th birthday, which was coming up mid-January. I mean, what can you say about her that hasn't already been said by millions of people around the world? She was a television legend, started when TV started. I mean, she was on experimental television back in the day, and of course went on to be a panelist on a bunch of different game shows, The Match Game, To Tell the Truth, What's My Line, I've Got a Secret, all the classics, you know, and of course Password, where she met her husband Alan Ludden, and actually during the first season of Password back in 1961, and they stayed together until his passing in 1981 from stomach cancer. She never remarried, and she was quoted a bunch of times as having said, "When you've had the best, what do you care about everybody else?" And actually, it just came out today, Vicki Lawrence, who used to work with Betty White, reported to one of these, you know, tabloids, whatever, and said that Betty White's last word was Alan, calling out to her husband, which is kind of sweet. I actually have a Betty White story that I don't know I've seen reported too much yet that's sort of relevant to what we do, if I could tell it.
Sure.
Please do.
So this was maybe a decade ago. I want to say 2009, a little more than a decade ago. Game Show Network was doing what they called the Game Show Awards. They did it once, never did it again. And it was a big sort of award ceremony. They invited all the original hosts and all the classic hosts and all the people who had been on shows. And they gave out, you know, Lifetime Achievement Awards to, you know, it was a sort of big grand primetime thing. And they had invited Betty White and they had invited Bob Barker. Now, these are two game show personalities who also spent a lot of time championing animal rights causes. And at this particular time, there was a controversy surrounding the treatment of an animal, of an elephant to be specific, at one of the zoos in Southern California. And there was some disagreement over whether the elephant should be moved to a larger habitat or if it should. There was some disagreement about where the elephant should go. And Betty White and Bob Barker found themselves on different ends of the spectrum. They found themselves disagreeing about where this elephant should go. And Bob Barker was scheduled to be given the Icon Award, or whatever they call the highest award they were going to give that night. And he threatened to pull out of the award show if Betty White showed up.
Wow.
And there was a lot of drama backstage surrounding this leading up to the event. And eventually, Betty White, I guess being the bigger person, decided to not show up and had a pre-taped thing for the award show. And Bob Barker went and got his award. But I find that little irritating backstage drama sort of fascinating.
Wow. That is fascinating indeed.
You know?
I was on the edge of my seat, that's for sure. I love it. Well, I also am not surprised that Betty was the bigger person there.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of her thing, right? Like, she's always been, I don't know, a class act does not even begin to scratch the surface of the person she was.
Oh, yeah, total
Agreed.
Sweetheart. It was actually reported today, too, that it turned out she had personally paid for a bunch of animals to be rescued after Hurricane Katrina. I think a lot of displaced pets and a lot of animals that were displaced from the zoos in the area following that storm, she paid for their rescue out of her own pocket.
Wow.
So just Good in case stuff. You need another reason to like Betty White.
Yeah, like if we couldn't like her enough, here's another reason.
Right.
All right, what else you got for us, Christian?
Well, you know, there's this champion on Jeopardy right now. Her name is Amy Schneider, and she is breaking all kinds of records. You know, she got robbed yesterday. I just read this on Twitter. She is okay. And her tweet literally says, first off, I'm fine. But she got robbed yesterday. She lost her ID, her credit cards, her phone. She is an incredible Jeopardy player, and I hope she recovers from this. I'm glad she is okay. Items can be replaced, of course. But yeah, she is just kicking so much ass. So right now, she is the highest earning female contestant in the history of the show. And as a matter of fact, she's also the female contestant with the most consecutive wins. So she's at 21 wins right now. And that beat the previous record of 20 that was set back in 2014. She's just really impressive. And I was sad to read that today, but again, glad she's okay.
Well, not only am I glad she's okay, I like just saw that headline moments before we started recording just now. And I thought she had lost and was claiming like she was robbed, like on the game, like robbed out of a win. So I mean, I guess, like I say, I'm glad she's okay. Don't get me wrong. That's first and foremost the most important thing. But I'm glad to hear that she is still participating in Jeopardy and did not lose in a way that was maybe what's the word I'm thinking of?
I think what you're saying is you're glad. You're not saying you're glad she got robbed. I don't even know what you're trying to say.
I'm glad she wasn't robbed in two different ways. Let's say it that way.
Right.
There you go.
She was robbed in the money way.
Yes.
She was robbed in the I've been personally violated
way. We have
crack
news team, don't we? And she was robbed in the money way. Anyway, coming up.
Okay. Contentious. That's the word I was trying to think of.
Oh, gotcha. Beautiful. Well, you know what they say. Better late than never.
Yeah, well, not all in this right. case.
Christian, what else do you have for us?
All right, so this one, so this is news to me. There's this show that just premiered in the UK, and I wonder if you guys have seen it. It's on YouTube, and I have seen so much about it on Facebook and on Twitter. This show is called I Literally Just Told You. I don't know if you're familiar with it or seen any clips of it. A lot of clips have been circulating on Facebook of it over the past couple weeks. The show just started. It's hosted by Jimmy Carr. It's like this primetime sort of spectacular. And what they do is they have four contestants and they give them questions and they have to, you know, they're multiple choice. So, you know, you have to like pick your answers. The twist in I Literally Just Told You is that during the show, they have two question writers on stage live writing questions about anything that could occur during the show. So the rounds alternate between just like trivia and then just total, just recall, just remembering little things that the guest, you know, that the contestants said about each other, host, like jokes that the host might have made. And it's just a really fascinating show. It's really fun. It's played for laughs. The first episode was entertaining. The second one, even more entertaining because the contestants were so bad at the game. It's just awesome TV. I highly recommend it.
So that I did that as a kind of gimmick in my trivia nights a couple times where I would like ask questions about things that have happened over the course of the night. One time I asked like what was the answer to the second question in the third round or something like that. And one time I had a movie playing on all the TVs in the background. And then for the last question, I cut off all the TVs and I said, name any actor that's been in that movie that's been playing the entire time.
Wow.
So I love that idea of like sort of ersatz trivia, like making it up as you go along sort of stuff. It's cool.
Yeah, that's great. I'm going to definitely have to check it out for sure. All right, Christian, what about this week in game show history?
Well, you know, this week in game show history, I thought we'd do something a little bit different. You know, the news of Betty White passing has dominated the media lately, but there was the passing of another sort of game show legend, not sort of, definite game show legend, that actually occurred today. So this guy's name was Jay Wolpert. Now, Jay Wolpert might not be a name that's familiar with a lot of TV viewers, but to game show fans, to especially, you know, hardcore game show fans, going back to the 70s, this guy was, a legend. So Jay Wolpert was the original producer of The Price is Right in the 1970s. So he was one of the people that was on the team that spearheaded this idea that they're going to revamp The Price is Right, and they're going to make it modern and flashy and colorful. And he was instrumental in that change. Actually, one of the lasting effects of his influence on The Price is Right is the idea that during the showcases, the prizes are revealed in sort of skits. You know, there are sketches, there are, you know, plots and characters and things while they're revealing the prizes. He was the one to originate that idea. You know, before that, the showcases were just presented as prizes one after the other. But he, you know, just influenced this entire universe of characters, and it was just so much more entertaining. Created a lot of game shows, created a show called Hitman, where they would show contestants a little film about a certain subject, and then all the questions had to do with that subject and, you know, information they saw in the film. Excuse me. I'm sorry. I have a cold, and I'm like, I have a tickle in my throat. Give me one second. Okay. And I mentioned earlier that he may be familiar to people who aren't necessarily familiar with game shows. So once he left the game show industry after having created, you know, a bunch of shows, he wrote the screenplay for the film The Count of Monte Cristo, and later wrote the script for the first Pirates of the Caribbean film. So he was the originator of the character of Jack Sparrow. So to go from The Price is Right to Pirates of the Caribbean is just an incredible career. He was 78 years old, but he did pass away today. And a lot of diehard game show fans are remembering his influence on the world of game shows. So that's Jay Wolpert. Rest in peace this week in game show history.
What a transition, because like The Count of Monte Cristo like flopped, didn't it? And Pirates of the Caribbean was amazing.
Yeah, and just talk about just an incredible character to create. You know, the guy was just so creative. He had a show in the late 80s. He created a show called Blackout. Blackout was unbelievably cool. So you had two teams of people, and one member of each team would guess a word. All the while, they're being recorded on tape. The other team then has 10 seconds of blackout time. They replay the description, and they have a big blackout button. When they hit it, they mute the description. And after they use that 10 seconds of blackout time, the other team has to guess what they're talking about. Really cool show.
Hmm.
Weird.
Wow. Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's crazy. You know, I've got to say, Mike, we've always been amazed at what Christian brings to the table with This Week in Game Show History.
Right? It's always this, like, just fascinating stuff. I love it.
I totally love it, too. All right, Christian, it's time for Stump or Chump. Michael, are you ready?
I am. So I'm going to
Wait, I'm still blushing from the comment about history. Jeez, thank you, guys.
Oh!
It's not fascinating. I was bored the whole time. No. Okay. So I'm
all right. Now I'm ready.
I'm going off script a little bit with the Stump or Chump this week. Maybe calling an audible, as they say in the sports ball world.
I like it.
In honor of Betty White, I'm just gonna fire off some rapid fire Betty White trivia questions and see what you know or don't know. In the spirit of Betty White, there's no winners or losers. There's no stump or chumps. We are all winners. I just want to see what you know about Betty White. Ready to go?
I have been waiting all my life for Betty White trivia. Let's do it.
Oh, this is great. Yeah, go ahead.
All right. Betty White's middle name?
Oh, Elizabeth.
No, Marion. Oh. Okay, so she became known as the mayor of Hollywood after she became the first woman to produce a sitcom, which was titled...
Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. There was a sitcom called Life with Elizabeth, wasn't it?
That is indeed correct. Yes,
wow.
Indeed.
Wow. Okay.
She was the first woman to produce a TV show for... Life with Elizabeth. She was also the first woman to receive the Emmy for Outstanding Game Show Host for the show.
Oh, that was called Just Men.
Indeed, it is called Just Men.
Yeah, yeah.
Nice.
And then finally, this is a two-parter, but outside of the game show world, can you give me her character's name from Golden Girls?
I'm sorry, I don't know anything outside of the game show world. Her name was Rose. I forget her last name.
I was going to say last name is Nyland, N-Y.
Oh, God. If I had a second, I would have thought of that. Damn it.
And then
I wouldn't have.
Finally, What is the name of the fictional town from which she resides?
I remember, because I used to watch this with my mom all the time. St. Olaf. She always had stories about St. Olaf.
That is correct. St. Olaf, Minnesota. Yeah.
Right.
Well done.
Well, and the funny thing is that when we were doing improv comedy, Michael and I, we had a friend who went to the college of St. Olaf College, and it used to get made fun of all the time for being where she was from.
That's a great legacy to have.
Yeah, I know. Isn't it awesome? Well, that's fantastic. Mike, well done on the stump or chump. And Christian, great work on the Betty White trivia.
Nice. Yeah, great questions. I was legitimately challenged. Thank you so much.
So this week we're doing the Super Happy Japanese Game Show Funtime Extravaganza.
I had a lot of fun researching this particular topic, and I think I mentioned it to you guys privately earlier, but I realized that I know a lot more about Japanese game shows than I thought I did. It was
so
fun.
Good.
Yeah, it was fun, you know, researching a lot of the Japanese adaptations of American shows, because I think Japan has a really interesting take on a lot of these classic American formats. There's one in particular, though, that's not... I hope one day it's an American show, but have you guys seen, and I forget the name of it, I want to say it's called like Candy or No Candy, but they put a comedian or a contestant in a room, and one object in the room is made out of chocolate, and they have to guess what's made out of chocolate. Have you seen that?
Oh, yes. And they're like, it's not like obvious. It's not which one's made of chocolate. It like looks incredible.
No. Realistic. Yeah, they do an incredible job making it look like something other than chocolate. But
and like you honestly cannot tell until they are actively taking a bite.
Isn't that the best part about it, though? They could actually bite into something that isn't chocolate. Is that understood? Right?
Yeah, the guy like bites in, and it's like a picture frame, and it's just like, nope, that's actually a picture frame, or nope, that's actually a shoe.
Well, and of course, that's what you want him to do. You don't want him to find the damn thing. You want him to break his teeth on something that's not chocolate. But, you know, that to me typifies that type of Japanese television. I mean, it's just such a different world from what we see in America. And it's so entertaining. And I wish more of it would come here. But it's you know, almost the mystique of finding these like little Japanese TV gems on YouTube. I feel like that's part of the, you know, that's part of the appeal is like, you know, stumbling upon them and discovering them.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and we talk about this in more depth later, but like a lot of this stuff is from variety shows as opposed to strict game shows. And like the variety show format is not something you see very much in America. And I think that's why.
Not anymore.
Not anymore. You used to. And like there was the last one I even remember was a spoof. If you remember Viva Variety on Comedy Central back in the day, you know, like it's not a format that happens here. It seems to play in other countries, but you know, hopefully we'll get more stuff. Like you say, it's fun seeing this stuff, but it's also fun discovering it as opposed to having it presented. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
No, that's true. Yeah. Sometimes half the fun is the research or the finding or discovering of something.
Exactly.
I think the closest we have to a variety show nowadays is what a lot of the late night shows have become, you know, where the Fallons of the world are now playing games with the celebrities or they're lip syncing or, you know, there's a lot more than just a talking head at a desk, on those late night shows. And I think that's probably the closest we really have to variety shows in this country.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Yeah, that is very true.
All right, Christian, how about a plug for BuzzerBlog?
Of course, BuzzerBlog.com, the number one game show website in the world. Whether you're looking for information on new series, returning series, and whether that doorknob is made of chocolate, BuzzerBlog.com is the place to go.
Nowhere on your website does it tell me if my doorknob is made of chocolate.
Ah, you haven't checked your website today.
Thanks, Christian. We'll see you again next season.
My pleasure as always. Wonderful season, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, and remember, if you'd like to submit a question for Stump or Chump, or you'd like to tell me why Carrot Top is great, please feel free to email us or send us a message through social media. We'd be very happy to help you out.
Why Carrot Top is great is the bit that he had. Do you remember when Domino's delivery drivers had to wear those blue, like, I don't know what they were, but they were like the puffy, fake material jacket.
Yes,
he had
yes.
one of those in the red heater bag, and he said his gimmick was that he would answer the door in his Domino's outfit, just grab the pizza and say, "I'll take it from here," and shut the door so he didn't have to pay for pizza.
It's terrible.
No, it's great. You laughed. You laughed. You laughed. It's great.
He'd hold up a half gallon of milk, and there'd be someone who'd cut a hole in it, and he'd be like, "Look, whole milk.
Whole milk.
Not good. Not good. It's terrible." I'm just busting chops at this point.
Oh, no, I know. And look, that's the thing, is at the end of the day, it's Carrot Top. I cannot, reasonably defend anything.
All right. Well, we're not going to waste any more time because we've got a lot to get to. It is our Super Happy Japanese Game Show Fun Time Extravaganza. And coming up next in segment two, we're going to talk about all the Japanese game shows that were brought to America.
Yes, indeed. Man, this is a long sheet here. But yeah, we got some good ones coming up for Japanese game shows that have come to America. And I'm going to say the full term because you've said it twice now and I haven't got to say it once even though I wrote it. I'm going to say the Super Happy Japanese Game Show Fun Time Extravaganza. We'll be right back here on America's favorite game show podcast to tell them what they've won.
Hello.
I'm Nikki, a gaming noob.
And I'm Eric, a lifelong gamer. And we are Press Any Button.
Press Any Button is a video game podcast hosted by two married gamers for all experience levels.
In each episode, we cover a different video game's past, present, and future while adding a fun twist.
That's right. We present game challenges to each other. And if it's not accomplished, that person must show off their best rapping skills.
So if you like the podcast you're listening to right now,
be sure to find us on Spotify or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Welcome back. It's segment number two of America's favorite game show podcast, Tell Them What They've Won. This is episode 60, our finale for season three, the Super Happy Japanese Game Show Fun Time Extravaganza. Mike, this segment we've decided is going to be the Japanese game shows brought to America. Take it away.
Yes, indeed. And like I said, we got some good ones lined up. But first, I did want to sort of give a little prelude. I have some preludes, I think, for all these segments today.
Cool.
But this one, I feel like I don't want to spend too much time on this, but it would be a mistake to not talk about. It's called I Survived a Japanese Game Show, and it ran on ABC from 2008 to 2009.
Yeah.
Yeah, primarily. So the idea here is that, contestants get on this show and then they are sent to Japan where they then participate in one of the wacky Japanese game shows that, we'll be talking about in just a little bit. The deal here, the reason why I didn't want to talk about it too much is it's not real. They do not go on a real Japanese game show. It's all just staged, faked for U.S. audiences. What I will say is that the contestants do actually go to Japan and they do film a quote unquote Japanese game show in that they go to a Japanese television studio and ABC has put together a Japanese game show for them to participate in. But it's not like a game show that Japanese people would be watching on television. And additionally, it is shot in Toho Studios, which is, most famous, but famous in my mind for being the movie studio that did the Godzilla movies. They own the rights to Godzilla. The Tohoverse, I believe, is what they refer to as with all those kaiju mm-hmm. monsters and all that. So there you go. There's also a kids version of that show. It was called Japanesey Going Gong, G-O-N-G. It feels wrong saying both halves of that name. Like that is
it sure does. Like in today's day and age, I'm
right?
Just
well,
like,
and this was on Disney XD, and it was 2013 to 14. So it's not like we could say like, oh, it was a different time. It's like, yeah, it was not that long ago and it was Disney. So,
and it's still cringy.
Yeah. Yeah. But it was the same deal. It was not an actual Japanese game show. It was all just kind of, fluffed up to make it look like it for American audiences.
Hilarious.
So
my question is this, did they hit all the tropes of a true Japanese game show.
So I didn't actually watch any of this again.
It's fake. Who would, right? I mean, that's what saying.
I think that's a fair point, and I don't want to necessarily in the idea of Kenny G. I don't want to say it's fake, therefore it's garbage, but it's just not in the spirit of what we're talking about, right?
Sure.
It's made to resemble what Americans think a game show is in Japan, and that's going to be the big takeaway from this show, is that, you know, when you take stuff out of context from other cultures, it loses a lot of what it is, and therefore becomes this sort of... Waluigi is the example that pops into my head of this, of a, like a an inversion of a reflection, right?
Well, and I think we'll talk more about that in the beginning of segment four when we discuss what it truly a game show from Japan it really is.
Yeah, we'll dive in much more on that topic later.
Well, let's get into this. Go ahead.
Yeah, okay. So first off, I wanted to talk about what may be the most popular one, at least in my mind, and a lot of this was timing, but
This is also the most known. Like this is like not, I'm not going to say the Michael Jordan of the basketball world, but you know what I'm saying? Like, if you don't know the sport, that's the one guy you know.
Yes. I'm glad you said that, because I have that feeling as well. But we're speaking of Most Extreme Elimination Challenge, which in Japan is known as Takashi's Castle. The American version, MXC, is what they refer to it as. It was on Spike TV from 2003 to 2007, which the start of that is right at my third year of college. So like many of the shows that we've talked about, I was just dead center target audience for this show. And me and my college buddies loved watching this.
Art students smoking a lot of pot, looking for great things.
I don't know what you're talking about. So the show Takashi's Castle from Japan, this ran from 86 to 90. So what's interesting to note here, though, is that this is not an adaptation. This is not someone redoing or remaking a show in America. What they did is they took footage from the original show. They basically made highlight reels of different episodes and dubbed in like ridiculous commentary and
kind of like a
voiceover.
Mystery Science Theater thing.
A little bit, yes. So Mystery Science Theater is more making fun of a thing that they are watching, whereas they are redubbing it to be as if it was humorous.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know, redubbing a movie or something.
Go ahead.
MXC was created by three gentlemen. Paul Abayeta, Peter Kaiko, and Larry Strother. All three of those gentlemen were, they're not necessarily like huge celebrities, but they were working in TVs as writers, producers, that sort of thing. So they already had like a sort of leg in the industry. But what they wanted to do was just kind of take this show, like I say, and make it a comedy and Americanize it. The original show, the premise is that basically contestants are tasked with crossing these just absurd obstacles. Think along the lines of Wipeout, Holy Moly, American Gladiators, specifically Wipeout, Holy Moly. They borrowed heavily from this show in the construction of it. But so they have to go through these giant absurd obstacles, and they're making their way up to a castle, and thus to Takashi himself. The premise of the show is that he has constructed this hugely elaborate obstacle course to get to his castle for some reason. I don't know what necessarily the storyline is there, but the Takashi is a character played by a comedian whose name is indeed Takashi. His real name is Takashi Kitano, but he goes by the stage name Beat Takashi. I don't know if that's like beat as in the game is to, you know, defeat him, but I do know that Beat Takashi is not exclusive to this show. That is his stage name as a comedian.
Interesting.
Overall.
Okay, cool.
So then the American version that we have, they just do away with the rules pretty much. They, you know, claim that the teams of contestants are grouped by like, oh, these are the piano tuners versus the underwater basket weavers or whatever, just insane stuff. Again, this is the idea here is comedy, right?
Right.
And they're not making any, they're not saying any true things about the contestants, right? They're just making stuff up. The comedians performing, we have Victor Wilson and Chris Draga as Vic Romano and Kenny Blankenship. They run the play-by-play and color commentary, respectively. Again, from Holy Moly, thank Joe Tessitore and Rob Riggle. Though there's a bit more of a power dynamic between the two of them, and it follows very much a old style of Japanese comedy that I'll dive more into later that is actually quite popular in shows such as this. And then finally, we have John Cervenka as both Captain Tennille, that is the character's name. He is the field marshal who runs the game, and Guy Ledouche, who is the field reporter interviewing contestants and whatnot. You know, it's on the surface, it's Wipeout. That's really all it is. So if Wipeout's not your thing, you're not going to like it. But I will say they do a really good job with the comedy on it. I was a huge fan of this show, and I highly recommend it. And if nothing else, it's fun to just watch, you know, where all that Wipeout stuff came from. Takashi's Castle was no joke in terms of the way everything was set up and the theatrics and all that. So it's definitely worth watching just to see the history of those shows.
It was super, like, I remember watching it. I mean, it was just, it viraled online. I mean, it was so viral online. Like, we saw so much of it. And I remember as soon as I saw Wipeout, I was like, oh, this was a Japanese game show. They incorporated that from this. You know, I know they did. Like, I remember that specifically when Wipeout came out.
Well, and what's interesting is, like, so again, I'm like over speaking this, but like, this ran for 5 years on Spike TV. Like, I would even argue that you may not remember Spike TV if it wasn't for this show.
Well, it's very true.
Yeah,
it's very true. Wasn't the wasn't the Man Show on Spike TV?
No, the Man Show was on Comedy Central, I believe. It probably went to
Spike TV.
Yeah, Spike was supposed to be like TV for dudes.
Yeah, I know. Whatever. Okay, go ahead.
All right, up next we have a Hole in the Wall, or as it's known in Japan, Brain Hole. So Hole in the Wall aired in 2009 on the Fox Network. It was hosted by Brooke Burns and Mark Thompson. Brooke Burns, of course, I'm sure you know, but Mark Thompson I was not familiar with. I did a quick look, and it looks like he is like just a like on-hand Fox guy. And just like, we need someone for a Fox thing, we'll do Mark Thompson. That just seems to be his gig. He hosts stuff for Fox. And then it was, like I said, 2009, one season, they got rid of it. But then it came back in 2010 through 2012 on Cartoon Network, of all places. And it was hosted by Tech Holmes, who is a former cast member from The Real World Hawaii. So good on him for continuing his career. The basic idea here is that you have, it's, I think in the Cartoon Network version, this is the only one I'm familiar with. They were making that while I was working there. But there's usually two teams of contestants, think like Family Double Dare style. And right. Either one at a time or in pairs or all at once, they stand on the ledge of a pool and this big styrofoam wall drops down in front of them and then starts to slowly move forward towards them. In this wall is a cutout of like, you know, the coyote in the Roadrunner cartoons when he runs through a wall, like that sort of cartoonish cutout of a human in some sort of pose. Now, I'm not familiar with the Fox version, the Cartoon Network version, it starts off with a little simple, like, you know, you do like the T pose or whatever, or you just go straight up and down. But as it goes on, it gets more and more difficult. And then again, you have to do it two people at a time and whatnot. And the basic idea is you have to fit through the hole in the wall or it's going to knock you into the pool behind you. Obviously, points or whatever are rewarded if you do it, and the two teams compete. So what this came from, like I said, is a thing called Brain Hole that was on a show called The Tunnels, Thanks to Everyone. I'll say that again, The Tunnels, Thanks to Everyone. So this is a very strange title, but it's actually it's not that strange once you dive into it. So the way that this works, this is a variety show in Japan, and we will dive much more into those later because they are very, very popular and the source of a lot of game showery from Japan. But The Tunnels is a comedy group. So they are presenting a show called Thanks to Everyone. So it's as if it was National Lampoon's Thanks to Everyone. So this is just kind of to reiterate what I said before. If you gave someone in Japan Animal House and it said National Lampoon's Animal House, they would look at this and be like, this makes no sense. American movies have the weirdest titles, right? It's just because it's taken out of context and they don't understand what all that means. So there you go. This is a very common sort of name formatting is comedy group presents television show.
This show. Yes, absolutely.
So this segment was also nicknamed Human Tetris for obvious reasons.
Obvious reasons.
But the main difference here is that when you look up segments from that variety show in the Japanese version, a lot of times you can tell there is no intention of winning. One of the ones I saw was as if someone jumps up and does a split in midair, like a la Jean-Claude Van Damme or something.
Right.
And it's just like, there's not a chance they're going to win, but it's just hilarious to try and watch them do whatever they can to try and fit through this hole that clearly no human being could ever fit through. And that's sort of what, you know, you can get away with that since it's a variety show where it's just a segment as opposed to a full-on game show. You couldn't do stuff like that in the Cartoon Network version because it'd be like, that's not fair. You gave us one that literally is impossible to do, right? You get into the realm of the whole.
Right, but in a variety show, all you want to see is them go smashing into the water anyway. So
exactly,
that's great.
Exactly. Like, think of what would you do? You just want to see them get on the pie coaster. Who cares if the game they played was impossible or not?
Absolutely right.
Just final note on that, that the American version, Hole in the Wall, that is only one of many international adaptations. There was a list a mile long of many, many, many different countries have made their own version of this show. And as far as I could tell, they were all their own individual show like it was here in America. So, apparently just a very, very popular concept in general.
Well, it's funny. It just did not last long at all here. So, I mean, not everything communicates well from there to here. Obviously.
Yeah. And I mean, it got 2 years on Cartoon Network, which I you know, it's not great by any means, but I think it's not bad for Cartoon Network, right? Like, there's not really a whole lot of business a game show has being on that network to begin with. I think Hole in the Wall is a good one because, like I said, there are these cartoonish cutouts. It is very reminiscent of the old Looney Tunes.
Absolutely.
But, you know, I think beyond the idea that it's just like kind of funny to watch for a minute, I don't think that it has the staying power to make a full show here in America. Finally, in the game shows brought to us from Japan, we have American Ninja Warrior.
There it is.
I think everybody knows what this is. You're trying to, much like in MXC/Takashi's Castle, traverse an incredibly difficult and grueling obstacle course. The idea here is that it's not funny. It's not lighthearted.
Comical, yeah, no.
It is like tip-top shape, best of the best, insane human endurance kind of stuff.
Absolutely.
In fact, for American Ninja Warrior, to date, there have only been 3 people to complete it. Now, that may not be that impressive if you're talking about a show that started airing yesterday, but this show has been running consistently since 2009, and only 3 people have won. That's like saying Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, only 3 people won. Like that, it just, the fact that it's that high level of competition is nothing to be joked about. And so this is all based on a Japanese show, as I guess is to be expected, given what we're doing here today. The show is called Sasuke. I believe I'm pronouncing that right. S-A-S-U-K-E.
Yeah, by the way, you're doing really well on this.
Well, I've been reading these for a week now. I wanted to make sure I get them all correct. I also
I like it. Nice
I
work.
Also selectively left out some names here and there. This show, Sasuke, has been running consistently in Japan since 1997. It is still running today. So again, incredibly popular. The name comes from, all right, so I think this is going to be the first one I mess up, but I wanted to try it. Sarutobi. Sarutobi, Sarutobi Sasuke. He is a fictional ninja of, I guess, a storybook origin, but sort of wider pop culture fame. As I understand it, his name means something along the lines of flying monkey. You can find references to him all over the place, comic books, books. The anime Naruto apparently has a character based on him. Yes, just a very well-known very adept fictional ninja. And of course, this show is just massively popular in Japan. As I said, it's been running consistently since 1997. It has an amazing amount of spin-offs in Japan. Like, there's one that's, I can't remember any of the specifics, but there are spin-offs based on specific spins on the goal. In other words, like, you know, the idea of Sasuke is let's have the most difficult obstacle course possible, but maybe they have a specific spinoff one year that's all water sports or all weightlifting, or, you know, I don't know that they necessarily do all that specific, but there are many, many spinoffs, many, many, many international versions, and not to mention all the shows that have been inspired by it. Primarily the one I can think of is Ultimate Beastmaster. But I mean, I would say even to a certain extent, The Floor is Lava. You know, obviously, again, we're getting into the more silly realm with that sort of thing. But just the idea of, you know, a difficult obstacle course, you know.
Sure.
And so rewind a little bit on this one here. This show actually started before 2009, sort of, because G4, the network that ran it, in 2007, they actually held a contest to be a contestant on Sasuke. The grand prize winner of this contest was sent to Japan to participate in Sasuke. Apparently, that's a thing that Sasuke does pretty regularly, is they get talent from other countries, but that's the way they did it for America, and it proved so popular in 2007 that they did it again the next year in 2008. That proved so popular that the next year they just made their own dang TV show. So there you go.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, and it is very popular. And I'll tell you what, I get sucked in on late night television if that show is on.
It's so great to watch. It's so, like, thrilling and edge of your seat, like, oh my god, he did it, you know, like, it's just it's great, it's a thrilling show.
It really is.
And I'd love to watch some Sasuke, because you know, the way that it reads is that it's almost like the Olympics, right? Like, they are looking for the creme de la creme of, you know, peak physical condition,
right?
And so, yeah, arguably, you know, the world's closest thing to superheroes are on that show.
And you're absolutely right. And the cool thing is that a lot of them have great stories behind it, and they do a real nice job with that show. I'm very impressed with that show.
Indeed.
All right, Mike. Well, that's the end of our first segment of shows. That was, of course, the Japanese game shows brought to America. And obviously, that's not all of them.
No, there are lots more. And there's also, like, you know, shows that are based on segments from other shows. We'll talk about that more later. And I mean, you know, as with any show, this is not meant to be an exhaustive list. These were just our highlights.
Yeah, and just the ones that we want to feature. Speaking of which, coming up next, we'll be featuring the U.S. shows brought over to Japan.
Indeed.
And it's going to be interesting to hear about those, because what do they do with our shows?
Yeah, well, I gotta say, again, going back to the sort of core theme here, when you really dive into it, there are things that seem weird out of context, but at the end of the day, it's like, no, it's just a foreign version of whatever show we're going to talk about. No spoilers.
Well, and we'll only spoil it this far. We'll be back right after this. You've been listening to America's favorite game show podcast, Tell Them What They've Won. We'll be right back. welcome back. You're listening to America's favorite game show podcast. Tell them what they've won. It's the season 3 finale, episode number 60, the Super Happy Japanese Game Show Fun Time Extravaganza. Yes. Mike, we are now on. Wait, did I screw it up?
No. No.
Did I get it right?
You got it right. I don't think we screwed up once.
Wow. Okay. That's I'm 2 for 2. All right. All right, Mike, this segment, we've got U.S. shows that have been brought over to Japan from the U.S.
Yes, indeed. Much as, you know, we get game shows from other countries, Japan included, our game shows get brought over to other countries, Japan included. So the first one that we are going to talk about, it was presented as the name Quiz Grand Prix. I also found the translation Quiz Grand Prize. The full name, as Google Translate gave it to me, is Quiz! Exclamation point, Family Do Re Mi Fa Grand Prize.
I'm thinking it didn't get it.
Yeah. So it's Name That Tune. That's what it basically translates to.
Well, now, in all fairness, then do re mi fa makes sense.
Yes. And so that was a term. I looked that up. I'm not going to say I did a deep dive. I Googled it and looked through the first page of results. And sure, that term is used in other Japanese shows as well. So I believe there's some sort of background to it that we don't get, but there's sure, some sort of cultural significance where do re mi fa is representative of maybe music quiz shows in general,
or music in general,
music,
yeah,
somehow,
yeah,
yeah, yeah. But sure, it ties into music, so yeah, family music quiz basically is what this show is. Name That Tune. This is a quiz show, as the name implies, that involves music trivia, most typically identifying songs being played. The way this is 5 contestants are going to compete against each other. Usually it'll be family groups. Again, think along the lines of Family Double Dare. They're all playing against each other, and then there will be 3 to 4 celebrity guests over the course of the show who are performing the music that, you know, the contestants are guessing. And they will go through various formats of asking these questions. Now, okay, one thing I do want to say about a lot of this stuff that we talk about is I had to translate a lot of Japanese stuff to get this information, so there's language barriers as well as me not being familiar with this show, so I could be totally wrong on a lot of this stuff, but I'm just going to go with what I got.
Send all questions, comments, suggestions, and more to
yes, exactly. Yeah, someone else. But what to say, I don't know if there are questions about music as well as these Name That Tune games, but it seems like the Name That Tune style games are the ones that really you know, are the meat of the show. But like I say, they use various formats to do so. One is that 5 songs are being played in sort of rapid quickfire succession, and you have to get all 5 of them quickly. One that I love and would love to even try, I don't know if I'd be able to do it, but you have to watch a video of someone singing a song, but there's no sound. There's no vocals, no music behind it. You just, wow, got to figure out what it is from their lip movement. Now, you know, someone who is hard of hearing and used to reading lips, of course, I would have no problem with something like that. But I think for, sure, you know, I certainly would not be able to do very well at it, or at least I'd be curious to see how well I could do. One of them, again, translation issues are probably abound on this one, but so I'm just going to read the quote. One of the guests sings a song upside down. I don't know what that means, because if it's simply that they hang the celebrity upside down and then they play the song, that's not going to be that difficult, right? Maybe it is that, and it's just that it's ridiculous that they're hanging upside down. That doesn't sound right to me. I was thinking maybe it's that they play it backwards, but I feel like that would be an incredibly hard thing for a musician to do, even like a seasoned. So I don't know what that means, but it's intriguing for sure. Yeah. So if anyone has any ideas of what singing a song upside down means in Japan, let me know. Because, again, just like do, re, mi, fa, it probably means something that we just don't have the cultural context to get. Either that or it was completely mistranslated and it's like, you know, the song is sung by a fish. Who knows? But the idea is that, you know, again, you try to buzz in, getting a right guess leads to points, and getting a wrong answer deducts points and also leads to a punishment, which is a very common thing in Japan. They love to punish people for getting wrong answers. In this show, you have to wear what's called a baton mask, which I would think at one point was probably not too well known, but these days with COVID, it's one of those masks. It's a white mask with a big red X on it indicating cannot speak. And then they have to, again, probably translation issues here, but move to the back chair. I think it probably just means like lose a turn, or maybe since they're like families, they, you know, are in a row and the first person in the row answers that time, something like that. I don't know exactly what it means, but there you go. So this specific version that I'm talking about here, which again translates to quiz family do re mi fa grand prize, only ran for 1 year in 1976. So why are we talking about it, might you say? Well, because after that it changed names to simply quiz do re mi fa don. That having that don on there, that does something too. I don't know what that means.
It does.
Some of the Japanophiles who listen, please tell us what we're missing here. And that version ran until 88. So, 12 years on the air total for this show. So that is pretty darn good. The only thing we didn't talk about was the family aspect. We did. When they changed the name and dropped the family from the title of the show, they also dropped the family aspect of it. So I think maybe that, like I said, the moving to the back chair, maybe that only happens in the family version. Or maybe there's some version of moving to the back chair that happens in solo play as well. I don't know. But you still get five contestants. It's just one person on each contestant squad. Yeah. Anyways, there you go. That is Family Do Re Mi Fa Grand Prize, also known as Quiz Do Re Mi Fa Don.
The American version of Name That, or the Japanese version of Name That Tune.
Indeed. Indeed you do.
I like it. All right, what's next?
Next, we have Super Dice Q, which, based on Japanese shows, I'm assuming that Q stands for quiz because they love quizzes. This is Japanese High Rollers. Yes,
great.
Indeed. So we have two players competing head-to-head, and it's a returning champion facing their new challenger. But it's a little different in High Rollers. In High Rollers, the idea is that you are trying to knock everything out to win, right? In this, it's almost like a little battleship style, in that each player is going to select a number 1 through 9 secretly before the game starts, and that is their knockout number. And then so a question is asked, hence the Q quiz part, and then whoever buzzes in with the right answer gets to pick a number from the board, or they can, you know, pass the choice to their opponent if they so choose. If that chosen number is the person's knockout number, they're out. Otherwise, they keep playing. So the idea is you're trying to knock out the other person instead of knock out your own numbers. One big aspect of this show in Japan was that they wanted specifically to make this a luck-based game, or at least heavily influenced by luck. You know, obviously, it's a trivia quiz game, but they specifically make the trivia questions not difficult. I think one of the ideas there is that I can't remember what show it is that we've talked about, but the idea is a speed buzz in, maybe more than it is large knowledge bank sort of thing. Interestingly, that's basically what Super Dice Q is. But what's interesting is that this is actually the second iteration of the show. The second iteration of Super Dice Q is the Japanese version of High Rollers. The first iteration of Super Dice Q was actually based around Tic-Tac-Doe. They literally were like, we need to adapt this to Japan. And, you know, contestants are trying to get 3 in a row. But in this, what I thought was kind of cool was that their questions were two parts, not only making it more difficult on the questioning front, but it makes it harder to get 3 in a row. And what I mean by that is, so like example, you get the question, what's the capital of Japan? Tokyo. Okay, well, who's the current governor of Tokyo? That's an example of sort of a two-parter. One flowed into the other. Therefore, you could, in theory, get either one and not the other, both or neither, right? And so you get a different colored or different, yeah, different colored check mark on the board, depending on which of those three you got. So in other words, you could get 3 in a row that are your pieces or whatever, but if they're not the same color, then I don't think it counts, right? Like you're trying to get a true tic-tac-toe. What's also interesting about that initial iteration is that it's all about how the squares were colors, but it debuted on black and white TV.
Really?
Yeah. Apparently it didn't really catch on too well, and that's why they switched it over to high rollers. I have to imagine that's why. Anyways, yeah. All right, and then finally we have the Japanese Family Feud. This was originally called the Family Opposition Quiz Battle, but then later changed to I Asked 100 Quizzes. It ran from April 2nd, 1979. This is the first one that I have actual dates for.
Nice.
And then ended on September 24th, 1984. So not the longest run.
Still 5 years. That's not bad. I mean,
yes. Well, and well, hold the phone because it comes back. Yeah. So this 79 to 84 is when it was called Family Opposition Quiz Battle. It was hosted by a gentleman named Hiroshi Segi. I should have left this one out.
Sekiguchi.
Oh man, that was good. And he, quote, appeared in all episodes without delay and absenteeism during the broadcast period. So, in other words, he did not miss a single show.
He didn't miss one episode. God bless him.
Yeah. 79-84. Good job. Without delay, no absenteeism. And, okay, that host referred to the announcer, and again, this has to be a translation thing, but the host referred to the announcer as the middle-aged man in the attic. I mean,
I'm not offended at all.
I love it. I love that name. I don't know what it means, and again, maybe it's a translation thing. Maybe there's a context that where I'm not aware of, yeah, but I just, but the middle-aged man, let's go to the middle-aged man in the attic with the update on how the team is doing.
Sounds like something you'd get on remote control,
right? Oh yeah, absolutely. Okay, so here's the thing. It ended on April of 1984, and then the second run of the show starts in 1984.
Okay,
the show then ends in 87, and then there's a third run that starts in 87. So I don't know if it's something that, like, maybe shows are contracted out, and then when it gets renewed, it's considered a new run of the show, or maybe it was just, like, when it was canceled in 84, they were immediately like, oh, no, that was a bad idea, and then again in 87. I don't know how this works, how a show gets canceled twice and then renewed again both times in the same year. That seems weird to me.
I don't know.
But so, I will sorry, what?
Did I was going to say, so Richard Dawson was the host of this one?
No, actually, Richard Dawson did not host any of those. But the third iteration was hosted by the aforementioned Beat Takashi of Takashi's Castle.
Excellent.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it have been cool if Richard Dawson had his own castle?
Dawson's Castle.
Okay. I love it.
And then we could change it. We would have to rename him to Beat Richard, right?
Beat Richard.
Ooh,
yeah.
Ooh, okay, hang on. We got to steer away from that one. That's going to get
not
safe for work real quick. This was one where I could not find much translatable information that was helpful. Watching the show was very unhelpful. It's Family Feud, but you know, I couldn't tell anything that they were saying. I will say the sort of confused look of the host when someone gives an odd answer, totally still there. They got that part down.
Steve Harvey. They got the Steve Harvey part down.
They got the Steve Harvey. Apparently, they know that's a very popular aspect of the show, so they kept it for sure.
Well, I love it.
So, there you go. You know, really not they don't take our shows and make them all that more different. You know, Name That Tune has five people instead of two. High Rollers is a knockout and the opponent instead of knockout yourself.
And Family Feud just has a middle-aged guy in the attic.
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's the same show.
It's the same show. but what I will say is interesting is that not that these shows did not do well, but comparatively to other shows in Japan, they did not do well. And I think by the same token that Japanese shows don't really play in America, I think it's just what audiences want in the two countries is so different that it doesn't really translate well.
Well, it's super interesting. All right. Well, so that's the end of the segment. We've got another great segment coming up. Mike, what are we looking forward to in segment number four?
So finally, in segment number four, we have shows that can only be found in Japan that have not made it. Well, okay, I'm not going to say only in Japan, but not in America. So, yes, shows that we probably don't know here. And there are some cool ones for sure.
That'll be great. All right, it's coming up next. You're listening to episode number 60 of America's Favorite Game Show Podcast. Tell them what they want. It's the Super Happy Japanese Game Show Fun Time Extravaganza. And we'll be back right after this. And welcome back. It's segment number four of episode number 60 of America's Favorite Game Show Podcast. Tell them what they've won. This week, it's our Super Happy Japanese Game Show Fun Time Extravaganza. And Mike, it's the end of season number three.
It is. Man, who would have thought we got three seasons under our belt?
I know. And I'm very excited for what's about to come our way in season number four.
All sorts of big changes. But for now, let's talk about some shows that are only in Japan, or
sounds good to me,
not in America. So before we dive in too much here, I did want to talk about the idea of the sort of wacky Japanese game show that we know here in America. Most of what you would see as that, you know, as a check out this wacky Japanese game show, is really just a bit on a larger variety show, much like that The Tunnels Thanks to Everyone that I mentioned earlier. These variety shows are very, very popular in Japan, and they often have these bits that are game show in nature. But yeah, they're scattered throughout. It's not an entire show based on those things. And, you know, taken out of context, it looks very strange. Frankly, left in context, it looks very strange too, but it loses a bit of that strangeness. And the other thing to keep in mind is it's not like Japanese people are doing this and being like, oh yes, this is perfectly normal behavior. Like, they're fully aware that it's ridiculous and super off the wall wacky. It just plays better there because they love that kind of funny stuff, you know. It's there, it's that sort of humor that plays well in that culture.
Sure.
With the idea of these variety shows, I also wanted to talk about a sort of longer history behind it, which is a art form known as manzai, I believe you would say, M-A-N-Z-A-I. I believe it is pronounced like bonsai. They are part of the same sort of philosophy, I guess.
Sure.
But the idea of manzai is a ancient Japanese comedy routine, for lack of a better term. It's sort of, think of like maybe the old Who's on First vaudeville bit,
sure,
but not a specific bit and much, much older. The idea is, like I said earlier with Vic and Kenny on MXC, Most Extreme Elimination Challenge, their dynamic is very much manzai in nature. The idea that one of them has a status or power over the other, one is maybe a little inept and is abused potentially because of that. Think maybe Pinky and the Brain, if that's something you're familiar with, that sort of interplay between characters.
And isn't it also, Mike, about like the banter between the two, like the speed of the banter?
Yes, yes, they're very, it's very quick-witted, very fast-paced, back-and-forth conversations with each other. And that's another thing that you see a lot of in Japanese things, is this idea of talking maybe faster than would be a natural tone for someone. And again, it's not that like they see this and think like, oh yes, that's normal. It's, oh yes, that's, maybe they don't know the name of the style or whatnot, but you know, just like we wouldn't necessarily know vaudeville, but you'd know an old timey comedy routine if you saw it. It's that same sort of idea. And so it's things that seem stranger to us, or maybe even seem a little more cartoonish to us, simply because we don't have this cultural history of hundreds of years of seeing this comedy style, right?
Right.
And so when you put it in that context, they definitely lose a little bit of that sort of quote unquote wacky Japanese aspect. But that manzai comedy structure is the foundation of many of these variety shows, and therefore many of the game shows, the game show clips, I'll say, that we see. In doing some backtracking on what led me to Japanese game shows in the first place, this was many, many years ago when I was in college, I backtracked to a show called Gaman, G-A-M-A-N. As I came to find out, this show is not particularly popular, isn't really well remembered. From what I could figure, like the average Japanese person, even the average Japanese television watcher and fan of variety shows, probably doesn't know this show. But it is very well known in other countries outside of Japan, particularly in the U.S., because it did sort of start the idea. I don't know if it started necessarily, but was the source of what a lot of the clips that we see, or at least that I was seeing back in my college days and, you know, the mid-2000s. But it's what apparently led to the sort of blow-up of the idea of the wacky Japanese game shows. One of the specific ones was a stunt that they referred to as endurance. And the idea is that these players, usually college students, they had to put up with an awful ordeal as long as they could. Last man standing wins, twist being that they're in a library of, theoretically, their college, and so they have to be quiet the whole time. Making noise eliminates them. Examples of what they had to do is being licked by a lizard. I don't know how you make a lizard lick. That seems difficult, as opposed to just having a lizard crawl around you. Dealing with gross stuff, eating things a la Fear Factor, or the one that started this whole search for me, which was where they're in a, like I say, they're in a library, they have to be quiet, and sumo wrestlers come in and fart on them. Literally press their butt up against their face and just let it rip. And they have to endure this for as long as they can without laughing or making any noise. It's fabulous. I love it.
It reminds me, and it must be a ripoff. It has to be, or not a ripoff, but I think they ran a show on MTV called Silent Library back in the day. It ran from like 09 to like 11, and it was like a bunch of guys sitting around a table in what looked like a library, and they would do different painful things to one another, and you couldn't make any noise, and there was like a little volume thing that was measuring how many decibels it was, and if it went above a certain one, oh, you were out.
Yes. So that's exactly how it worked too. And I have to imagine that this is something that is probably not from a single source. I'm sure this bit has been done several times.
Many times.
Again, the one show that I talked about was from the one clip that I found, and is, like I said, not very popular. So I'm certain that concept has persisted through other shows. But I had no idea that there was an American version of it. I love to know that. That's great.
Yeah, Silent Library. Google that one. But I mean, I caught one episode of it once, and I was like, kind of drawn in, but also at the same time, I was like, okay, this is kind of ridiculous. But I'm definitely not surprised to hear that it came from a Japanese game show.
Yes. Well, and so again, I want to go back to that. That's the sort of through line that I've been drawing here, is that this was presented to me as there's a show where you get farted on and you have to deal with it. As if that's all that the show is, right? And so you see it, and it's like, how is this an entire show? Well, it's not. That's one of the endurance things. That is one of the bits on this variety show that has all sorts of stuff going on. Right. So again, taking it out of context, you know, if there was a bit on, I'm trying to think of a show where it wouldn't be that weird for someone to get farted on, but at the end of the day, like, I could see that being a bit on a, you know, some Nickelodeon show where you have to get farted on, not get grossed out. You know, Fear Factor, they eat bull testicles or whatever. So,
oh God, I know,
right?
Blah.
Like at the end of the day. So yeah, there you go. The Japanese variety show, I think, is far more prevalent when it comes to the wacky Japanese game show than the true Japanese game shows are.
Right.
So with that, let's dive into a bit more of the traditional Japanese show. Like we mentioned earlier, quiz shows, incredibly popular over there. This is sort of a twofer in this one here, because I wanted to mention the sort of prototypical quiz show, the sort of framework upon which other quiz shows are based. It was a show called Quiz Up Down, and it's fairly self-explanatory, but the name is apt. The contestant is put into a little elevator, and then they're asked questions. If they get an answer right, they will move up a little bit, and if they get an answer wrong, they will move down a little bit. And the idea is they want to get to the top to win. Very simple, basic concept. That show was probably pretty popular, but I think it's more the concept that has then been adapted into other quiz shows. I think you can also find examples of this in many other Japanese-based things. My random connection is the Super Nintendo game Legend of the Mystical Ninja. There's a level where you play Quiz Up Down. But the real quiz show that I want to talk about here, this show is great. It's called Quiz Time Shock. It was on from 1969 until 1986, and much like Millionaire, if you answered all of the questions given to you, you win 1,000,000 yen, which is way before Millionaire winning 1,000,000. So I have to imagine just the idea of 1,000,000 yen is not anywhere close to what winning $1 million is.
I want to say it's like $8,000 or something. It's not a lot.
Okay. Okay. Well, it is. I mean, but it is the titular million, not titular, but yeah, you know. The word you. 1,000,000 has weight to it, right? 1,000,000 of anything is pretty cool.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
So much like Quiz Up Down, the contestants are placed in a little, in this case it's a chair, but they're elevated up and raised high up above the set. And then they will choose a sort of packet of questions, sight unseen, of course. They don't know what questions are, but they have 10 little packets to choose from. And then when they choose it, their timer starts, and at regular intervals, as the timer counts down, the next questions will pop up regardless of whether the last question was answered or not. So you could be sort of hemming and hawing over the question that's being answered to you and take too long, and now all of a sudden the next question's there, and you have to abandon the question and go on to the next one. You win money based on the number you get right, and the bonus for getting them all is, again, the 1,000,000 yen that I mentioned earlier. There is also, as standard in Japanese game shows, a punishment if you get 0 answered correctly. I didn't actually see this happen. Getting 0 of the questions, I feel like, would be very difficult. But apparently the chair spins around at top speed. I don't know what top speed means, and also the clips I saw, they did not look strapped into this chair. So, like, I'm imagining this thing whipping around at like 700 RPM and just like flings them into the audience.
Oh, it'd be great.
Yeah. Again, like remote control style, just fling them out of the show. You got none.
Love
you're
it.
Out of here. Not actually
Love
like
it.
That though, but I'm sure.
Love it.
I think overall it's not like that it's terribly difficult, but I love the idea of the sort of nonstop barrage of questions, right? Like, I feel like that could really throw you off your train of thought. And it seems to happen in the clips that I watched, not that I was able to understand what was going on because I don't know Japanese at all, but just watching, you know, you could tell if they got questions right or wrong. And like, he would get to a question and, like I say, sort of hem and haw on it for a little bit. And then the next question would come up and he'd be like, oh man. And it takes enough time to even do the like, oh no, I got that wrong, I need to move on to the next question. And that question's already halfway over. So like, you really, jeez, it's like that sort of incremental, you get more and more off your game. Now, it's not that you have to go back and re-answer all the questions you missed. Again, you pass it and move on. But it's very hard to make your mind stop thinking about the question that you were like, oh, I know that one. And now be like, oh, shoot, I got to move on. Oh, and I only half heard that because I was too busy thinking about the last one, right? Like, it,
yeah.
It seems like it goes from easy to hard very, very quickly.
Wow.
So, yeah, that was a cool one. I like that the way that plays. Finally, we have to talk about a show called Panel Quiz Attack 25. This is the granddaddy of Japanese game shows. When I was saying earlier how even those American shows, that not that they were unsuccessful, one of them I think was at 12 years, compared to Japanese shows, it's nothing. This is on the air for 46 years.
Wait, what?
46 years. Started in 1975, wow. Ran to 2021. And yes, I did actually confirm that it is canceled. It ran until 2021. We cannot say still going.
Still going.
Just ended. Yeah. I think back in May is when they officially announced it. And this was created by Shozo Tsutsumi. And I wanted to bring him up because he developed the aforementioned Quiz Up Down show.
Nice.
Which, between that and this, I'm calling it, he's the Japanese Merv Griffin. I mean,
there he is.
If even if his credits involve nothing else than those two shows, he is a legend in the field.
He's a Goodman Todson production.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And another interesting note about this show that I thought was worth mentioning was that they have kept the same theme and interstitial music the entire time.
For 46 years. Holy cow.
The music in 2020, they reorchestrated it, but recorded it with better sounding instruments, but right, it's still the same exact arrangement.
Wow.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it.
So what is this show? It is Othello, the board game. The creator actually cited Othello as the inspiration for this show. He wanted to see Othello on TV. If you are unfamiliar with the idea of Othello, is basically the idea is you want to surround pieces of the board. In Othello, I think it's just either side of a space. In this one, it is indeed surrounding it. And I don't think that you exclusively have to surround a space to claim it. I think it is when a space is surrounded, whoever has the most surrounding it claims it. And basically the idea is that, you know, they it's a quiz show. They are asked questions and the contestants buzz in, and when they get a question right, they get to choose which square turns to their color. Again, trying to get as many of the squares on the board as they can and entrapping as many squares as they can, thus ensuring that they claim the ones in addition to the ones that they claim for correct answers. There is also what they refer to as an attack chance at the end of the game, where you can change one square back from what it was to neutral, making it available for anyone to claim again. Another part of this that I did not clarify just because of, you know, lack of information in a language that I was able to read. I'm not sure if that, I have to imagine that that means it's not being counted as surrounded, right? Because then it feels like you clear it and then it would immediately become uncleared again. But I guess you could clear something that's not surrounded.
Right.
Yeah. Either way, I think that adds a big toss-up at the end of the game that really can throw a wrench in people's game plan, and that's the, you know, attack that is mentioned in the title of the show. And who, again, like I said, whoever has the most squares at the end gets to play the bonus game, which is called the Travel Challenge Quiz. And this is kind of a cool thing where the the bonus game is incorporated into the main game. The idea is that a video of location is played, and they have to guess what the location is, and they win a trip to that location. The rub is that the only part of the video that they get to see are the squares that they maintained control of in the main part of the game.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
Right? So it's like, not only do you have to get the most spaces, but you got to like maybe strategically
see
space
enough.
Them
yeah.
out over, because if you just get the upper left-hand corner, that might make it a lot harder than if you got little bits here and there, you know? So yeah, I thought that was, I think a thing we've mentioned before is, you know, it's not terribly common that you see a true connection to main game and bonus game. Usually,
and bonus game,
like,
absolutely
it's
right.
It's like a
yeah.
remix of the main game, right? This is literally, you know, the consequences of one affect the outcome
directly
of the other.
Affect the other. Yeah, yeah. Absolutely. It's That's cool. great.
So there you go. Panel Attack Quiz or Panel Quiz Attack 25. Like I said, 46 years on Japanese television. Wow. So,
love to know the reason why it got canceled this year,
right? Who knows? You figure after 46 years, you just be like, let's just make it happen. But yeah, with that one, I want to say that's the one you should take away, because that is a true Japanese game show. The wacky Japanese game show that you hear so much about, I think, is a little overplayed and not actually game shows.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny because when we were originally talking about this, and I mean, even if you look at our title of Super Happy Japanese Game Show Fun Time Extravaganza, it's kind of like we are going with that whole trite theme.
Absolutely.
But the truth really is that that's not a true Japanese game show. And unfortunately, it's what we see as it is. But there's a lot of countries you go to that they're like, oh, this is what an American is, and they think of us all as, you know, cowboys with guns, and we're all not that.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
We make caricatures of each other because no one takes the time to dive in and explore and read this stuff and find out that, like, oh, that actually kind of makes sense. You know.
Well, Mike, I'm glad you took the time to dive in and make sense for all of us.
Well,
I appreciate it tremendously.
As much as I could, anyways. I still don't know how you sing a song upside down, but, you know.
Well, what we'll have to do is I'll have to get one of our Japanese listeners to do some translation for us so that we can understand a little bit better.
Yeah, no, I mean, I can't wait to hear just the myriad amount of stuff that we got wrong.
Hey, that's okay. We've never claimed to be experts in three full seasons of this. That's why we bring Christian on, because he truly is the expert.
Indeed. And, you know, he'll be showing up, I think, a bit more in season four.
Well, we sure will see. And season four will be right around the corner. We'll definitely let you know as it's coming. But right now, I think that, Mike, that's all we have time for this season.
Indeed. That's all the time we have for this year. No, dang it. I missed it by 2 days.
Yeah, you did.
I've had that in the hopper for so long, and it's missed it. Anyways, yes, thank you, Tom. Thank you, all our listeners. And with this new year, I want to say with a heartfelt thanks that we appreciate you spending your year with us. I was thinking about this morning. It is just absurd how many podcasts there are out there, and the fact that anyone chooses to spend their time listening to ours is we love it, and thank you so much for listening, and a happy new year to all of you out there.
Yes, absolutely. Tune in again next time, and we're going to bring you a great, wonderful, brand new Tell Them What They've Won,
all new flavor. Wait, what is it? They usually say, like, what?
Same great taste, different label.
New look, same great taste. There you
yes,
go.
Exactly
yes,
exactly.
Let's
right.
go with
there
that.
It is.
yes, and of course, make sure you check us out on social media: Facebook, Twitter, Insta, Book, Facegram,
Insta Face, East Face,
Twitter, Book,
Snap Face,
Snap Face. yes, all of those. And of course, as always, tell them what they won. Tell them what they won. I don't even know the name of my own dang podcast.
Come on.
Tell them what they've won.com.
Please subscribe, share, like, and drop a review if you've liked what you heard. And Mike, if you didn't like it,
Go on a Japanese game show and get farted on in the face by a sumo wrestler.
See you next week, Mike.
Bye, Tom.
You've been listening to America's Favorite Game Show Podcast. Tell them what they've won. A JTAC audio production. Copyright 2022. No part of this podcast may be reproduced by anyone without the express written consent of the creators. For more information or to contact us, please go to tellthemwhatthey'vewon.com.
Okay, Mike, what did you learn this week?
Short and sweet. I learned that gist, as in you get the gist of something, is spelled with a G, not a J.
Oh, there you go. Well, that's pretty good. I'm impressed that you're still learning to spell at this late in life.
Hey, you know, you got to learn sometime.
Absolutely.
What about you, Tom? What'd you learn?
I learned, Mike, that you and I have carved out a nice little niche in the world of podcasts, and to resonate on the sentiments that you have previously pontificated, I will say that I'm really glad that when we don't do a show, we get emails. Hey, are you guys okay? We haven't heard from you in 2 weeks. And I'm really glad that we could be there to help other folks, you know, entertain them, and that they have been there for us. And thanks for the calls, the emails, the text messages, that all the stuff that says, hey, you guys are doing a great job, or hey, you're not doing a great job, but we want to know here's the reason why you're not doing a good job. And I just appreciated all that. And it may have taken me three seasons to learn, but I did, and I learned the entire way through that this has been a lot of fun for us, and I'm really glad to take it on to season number 4.
Oh yeah.
Copyright 2022, a JTAC audio production.